Joining us now, the Secretary General of the High Council for Human Rights of Iran and advisor to the Chief Justice of Iran, Mohammad Javad Larijani. Thank you very much for being on the show this morning. Mike Barnicle, John Meacham, and Richard Haass are still with us as well. Let's go to the heart of the matter when it comes to Iran. The headlines of the past week, the IAEA report found evidence of nuclear weapons being a program in Iran, and you are quoted as saying that is quite laughable. Why, sir?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The reason is very simple. There is no single evidence in that. This allegation, which is aired again, is based on a document which was put to us 4 years ago, based on a laptop somewhere found by United States authorities. And at that time, 4 years ago, it has been discussed with the agency. And the conclusion was that none of these allegations could be verified. So by a letter, it has been closed, the whole issue. Then again, it has been renewed. And just give you an example, a good part of this so-called document, which is on the laptop, are, for example, lecture notes that somebody presented in Brussels or elsewhere in some universities. Some of them are parts of some textbook. Put together with pictures, formulas.
Well, let's back up.
It is totally inconclusive.
Inconclusive. And, yeah. So, and before I send this to Richard Haass, are you saying it doesn't exist? There is no nuclear program?
Well, we have very extensive nuclear program, but not to the direction of producing arms. Our nuclear project is very extensive, very advanced. We are number one in the Middle East. But we are not pursuing the nuclear armament for two basic reasons. Number one, there is a fatwa by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader, that it is against Islamic jurisprudence to build and use mass destructive weapons. It is haram, we call it, unlawful. And secondly, it doesn't add to our security. It is more liability than asset for us. Our military muscle is strong enough to repel or to deter any imminent threat. And this is basically a very important achievement.
Richard Haass, put this into perspective for us, the disconnect between the different reports we're seeing and what this gentleman is saying.
Well, quite frankly, it's impossible to take the Iranian denial seriously. They're preposterous. The International Atomic Energy Agency, taking information from all of the member states in the United Nations, have put together a comprehensive and extraordinarily damning report. And what there is a pattern, not a single incident, a pattern over years of an Iranian program to move in the direction of developing nuclear weapons. We see a procurement mechanism to build, gain access to all sorts of equipment. We see all sorts of undeclared efforts to produce nuclear material, now up to 20%, well on its way to what you need to produce a weapon. Most important, there's now serious evidence about the Iranian testing of the implosive device that would actually be the heart of a nuclear weapon. So the idea that the Iranians have all these underground and undeclared facilities, that they've been misleading the International Atomic Energy Agency for years, and the idea they're doing this oil-rich country, in order to produce electricity? If you believe that, you would seriously have to believe in the tooth fairy.
Sir, this doesn't sound like preposterous little pieces of information that we're throwing together randomly.
Well, the whole series of allegations is produced and initiated by the United States. It seems there is a good machinery to produce perpetual allegations against Iran. It's not only one case. I'm telling you exactly, there is no secret programs in our nuclear program and development. Iran's transparency is far ahead of the United States, far ahead of UK, far ahead of France, and uncomparable to Israel, which is a renegade state in the sense of NPT.
So you'll obviously let inspectors come into Iran, go in.
Inspectors are coming to Iran periodically. The cameras are there 24 hours. Yep. But this is quite obvious, yes.
But the whole concept of the way this works, just to be, when you talk about inspectors, let's just be clear, because I'm not sure everyone watching this will understand.
Please.
The entire international nuclear inspection effort depends upon the willingness of the country in question to cooperate fully. This is a gentleman's agreement. They declare the facilities that are involved in the nuclear business, then the inspectors come in and look at them. If they do not declare a facility, the inspectors don't give a chance. And the problem is, this is a gentleman's agreement in a world where not every country is a gentleman. So Iran, quite frankly, has undeclared facilities and undeclared programs which the inspectors have not had access to. And the reason we only know about it is that member states, not simply the United States, sir, but many member states of the United Nations have provided independent information to the International Atomic Energy Agency, which, by the way, you know and I know, is not controlled by the United States. We've had fundamental differences with this agency over the years, including over Iraq. We had fundamental differences. We've also had differences over Iran, where we felt, the United States, this agency was not being nearly tough enough. So now they've come in with an extraordinarily damning report, yeah. And Iranian officials can dismiss it, but without evidence.
So if this is a gentleman's agreement, the gentlemen certainly don't agree. And sir, you seem very confident. And almost as if it's funny that, and it's interesting because we interviewed Mahmoud Ahmadinejad about this about a year ago, off camera, and he too seemed very comfortable about his position, which is similar to yours. And if you're so comfortable with your position about the lack of nuclear armament and the facilities that the IAEA is talking about, why not let inspectors completely come in, open the door, let them come in and see what you have?
Well, the mechanism that gentlemen address is not complete because, first of all, there is no single secret installment or activity which is concealed from the agency. Secondly, 2 years ago, we asked the agency, tell us all the questions you have. Mm-hmm. And he managed to put to us six group of questions. The question were raised by themselves, not dictated by us. So one by one, group of inspectors came to Iran and we cleared them up, and there is official letters from them. This group has been finished. Then we move to another one. Well, it doesn't make sense that every morning somebody say, well, we guess there is some secret things down there. There should be foundation for this allegation. What do you mean the door should be open? They should ask, where do you want to inspect? Did they want to inspect my bedroom, the other places? I mean, it doesn't make sense.
You know, a few moments ago when you mentioned the nuclear programs of other nations, I detected a definite edge in your voice when you mentioned the state of Israel. Do you fear an attack from the state of Israel on your nuclear facilities?
Well, I mean, beyond the fear, what is the difference between us and Israel? Israel has the bomb, not a member of NPT. It doesn't disclose anything to agency. Nothing wrong with it. I mean, you see what the double standard is in here. We are a member of NPT. They periodically come to Iran. Their cameras are there. We don't have the weapon. Then the whole pressure is put on us. This is a bad thing. No, at all. We don't fear any attack from anywhere.
But given
we take it serious in our calculation, but we don't fear. There is a difference between that.
Given your tone again, sir, when you talk about Israel just a second ago, why shouldn't we suspect that there would be ambitions for Iran to join the club of which Israel is a part with the nuclear arms?
We are very advanced in the nuclear technology, which it is a matter of pride for us. Mm-hmm. And gentlemen mentioned that we have plenty of gas and oil. With all good calculation, the age of this is up to 2025 per year, 25 years from now. And it means that if we don't have it, then we should beg in front of the Western countries to light our houses. And we know how bad they are treating us in this area. We are right now very happy that we have the first power plant. We know how to make the fuel. We already have more than 25% share of Swedif and Eurodif. They don't give us a bit of this fuel that we need, even the 20% that we needed for Tehran.
Because of your track record. Because of your track record.
This is a country. It's important to keep in mind. We're not talking about an established democracy that treats its own people to respect. We're talking about a country also that is the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world. So there's obvious and understandable concern about what Iran is doing, not just in the nuclear realm, but more broadly.
In terms of record, I think United United States of America is the largest and the greatest country supporting terrorism. The records of terrorist activity, which is supported by the tax money
wait
of these
minute.
People,
wait a minute. Wait,
is
wait,
enormous.
Wait a minute. You can say
I can go this one
a,
by one. Too.
This is a free country, okay?
Yeah,
and
yes,
and part of our gift is we have the liberty and the freedom to say anything and to sound foolish, to sound absurd, or to sound smart. That's absurd, saying that America is the biggest terrorist nation in the world. But my question to you, sir, is you seem like a really nice guy, all right? Why doesn't your country be a better neighbor?
We have fantastic relations with all of our neighbors.
Really?
Definitely. But the policy of demonizing Iran is a very important policy which is pursued in the region. Well, it has its own benefit.
But it's just in little things, like the American tourists cross the border. Supposedly cross the border. You grab them, you scoop them, you hold them for months on end. Why?
Well, this is a very simple question. I answered that before. See, suppose the security of your people...
You're here.
I'm here with the visa. It's quite different. Security of United States people are patrol with Mexico elsewhere. They pick three Iranians and ask them, why you are in here? They say, well, we are just walking in the desert. Well, with the whole hostility and suspicions which is between the two countries, we say, well, you were in here to blow up somewhere. Definitely, they will put into jail for years, even if not in Guantanamo, they bring it somewhere else. It took a lot of time that we convinced. I was working on this case because they were like me from alumni at Berkeley. I talked with their family, managed to contact between them and family when they were arrested, their family to come to Iran, to take this suspicion away. This is very natural for security people to suspect a cross-bordering, which is in the most volatile regional area of Iran,
they're going to blow up the desert.
Shooting over there.
They're going to blow up the desert. What is the root? What do you think the root is of Iranian paranoia toward the United States and toward many of its neighbors? What is the root of this paranoia? Is it the fear that we find out about your nuclear program?
We don't have any paranoia about our neighbors. We are very suspicious of American paranoid about us. The question is that what is wrong with Iran that this persistent hostility?
You have a track record of international terrorism.
This is not true. We are ourselves the greatest victim of terrorism in the area. Let me ask you, who was helping Al-Qaeda and Taliban for years while we were at war with them in Afghanistan? United States of America. The money from this state was pouring to Al-Qaeda and Taliban. The idea was we should curb Iran by another religious front. Is it correct?
Richard.
Is it correct?
No, it's not correct. And the United States did support the Mujahideen, obviously, in order to get rid of the Soviet occupier.
We were the strongest supporter of Mujahideen.
To say that the United States supported Al-Qaeda is, again, preposterous. The fact is, though, Iran is supporting terrorism in Lebanon. It's supporting groups like Hezbollah, groups like Hamas. It is involved in Iraq. It is involved in Afghanistan. Iraq has basically become a regional power that is trying to destabilize many of the countries, trying to make them essentially, in some ways, heavily influenced by Tehran. And that is simply a fact of life, which, again, is one of the reasons the world is so concerned about an Iranian nuclear program. How do we know Iran will not become even more aggressive? How do we know nuclear materials will not end up in the hands of a group like Hezbollah? What do we see about Iran's track record that would lead us to believe that Iran in any way would be responsible with nuclear materials? This is a genuine concern. And if you dismiss it as laughable, sir, you are seriously underestimating not simply the American, not simply the Israeli, but I would suggest the world's concern over the direction your government is heading in.
The disastrous thing is the blind policy of the United States in supporting carte blanche, a renegade state like Israel, which is the source of all tensions in the region. If Hezbollah, you call them, a terrorist group, and Hamas, they are fighting to be given the permission to leave. What about Israel? was he is involved in government sponsored terrorism, kills everybody who thinks that it's not correct, and depriving millions of people from basic tenets of life. 60 years of atrocities in that area is supported carte blanche by United States. This is even against the basic interests of this nation. They don't know it.
Sir, do you recognize the right of Israel to exist?
We recognize the right of Jews, Christians, and Muslims to live together in peace and tranquility, to create a racist regime at the middle of the land is and put the others out is like to create a small enclave for the blacks and leave the rest for the whites.
I think you have an answer to your question.
Yeah. So the answer is no.
So this is fascinating.
No, there's not no. We respect any decision by Palestinians.
Yeah.
We are not in a position to tell them what kind of a state they have. But yeah. They should be given the chance to decide.
I guess we're not going to change
so
your mind.
So listen, this has been fascinating, and I think it's a great picture, window into the choices that Americans make when they're choosing their president, and also a sense of what our Secretary of State and what our diplomats have to confront and deal with when they're going out into the world and working with other countries. It is extremely complicated, and often conversations feel like they're going in circles because it's very hard to develop a common understanding or even a place where you can start engaging. And I think this was an example of that. Mohammad Javad Larijani, thank you very much for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you.
We will be right back. Welcome back to Morning Joe. 42 past the hour. We're going to switch gears. We decided just to talk about what just happened. Because we just had the Secretary General for the High Council for Human Rights on Iran on the show. We'll start there. And explain to me, first of all, because this reminds me a little bit of those breakfasts with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, which I went to two. And nothing happens except right. He sits around and makes a mockery of the entire situation. And I feel like I just saw that all over again. Why don't you give me the big picture, the more intelligent picture?
Well, what you just saw was not just, by the way, some guy off the street. This is someone from the first family of Iran. The Larijanis are incredibly powerful and influential. And what he basically did was denied what virtually everyone who's looked at this situation independently believes to be true, that Iran, among other things, is well on its way toward developing a nuclear weapon. And what I think it suggests is that who's ever the next occupant of the White House, be it Barack Obama or one of the Republicans, this could well be national security issue number one. If we can't, through some combination of sanctions, covert action, what have you, either change the government of Iran or so slow their nuclear program, your next president's going to be faced with a binary choice. Either we're going to have to learn to live with an Iranian nuclear program, with all that would potentially mean for Middle Eastern instability. Imagine what a crisis would look like between Israel and Iran or over Lebanon, with both countries with nuclear weapons. All it would mean potentially for an Iranian handoff of nuclear stuff to a group like Hamas or Hezbollah. Or Israel and the United States will have to seriously consider using military force against the Iranian nuclear program, which could buy you a couple of years, but we have to assume then the Iranians would retaliate, and among other things, the price of oil would spike to, you know, two or three times what it is now. It could be a terrible, far-reaching choice for the next president if we can't head it off. And nothing we heard over the last 10 minutes suggested that the world and Iran, not simply the United States,
was really disturbed by the entire interview.
Oh,
it was
you should be disturbed.
And the critical currency of diplomacy, right, Richard, is that you have to assume that people are rational actors, that they will act in a way that is predictable according to basic standards of human behavior. There wasn't anything in the last segment that made me think that Iran was a rational actor. If they are a nuclear nation, they deny the right of Israel to exist. Do you think they would act irrationally and preemptively against Israel or someone else?
The answer is we don't know, in part because you almost have to think of Iran as not just a rational actor, but also an irrational actor at times, and also actors in the plural. You've got the religious authorities, you've got the Revolutionary Guard, you've got the Al-Quds Force. For example, this recent assassination effort potentially against the Saudi ambassador in the United States. Who knows who in Iran authorized that? You're not dealing with a normal government.
You're dealing with, if you will, multiple governments. So the idea that various people in Iran could have this kind of authority over nuclear materials, if that doesn't keep you up at night, you're a sounder sleeper than you ought to be.
Yeah, and also I would love to hear each candidate really talk on an in-depth level in terms of their perspective on the Iran situation. You talked about the price of oil very quickly. What are the other ways to defuse this situation?
Well, you've either got to use covert action like we've been using to try to slow things down. You've got to hope for regime change of some sorts in Iran, which unfortunately doesn't look like it's happening. Can you ratchet up sanctions? Can you go after the Iranian export of oil? Now, that's really going to the edge of economic warfare, but might that not be preferable to going to the edge of warfare? I don't know, but I think these are serious issues, and I would simply say the Republican debate last weekend barely scratched the surface of the enormity of this issue and its potential consequences. You know, we're focused on Europe as an economic shock that could push us back into a double dip. This potentially is the other economic shock. What happens with Iran, what it would mean for oil, what it would mean for the world economy, it is difficult to overestimate the potential significance of this issue.
Richard Haass, thank you.